Throughout the Gospel of Mark, there are two main questions being asked and answered. Who is Jesus and what did he come to earth to do? Join us as we continue in our Identity and Destiny series as we uncover these answers and how they can impact our own identities and destinies. And now, here's today's message.
An incredible comeback story was Robert Downey Jr. You're probably familiar with Robert Downey Jr., right? He's an actor. He was a child actor. His father was a famous actor. Anybody know his name? Robert Downey Sr., right? That's good. See, this is easy. Just stick with me. And he was a child actor, and he kind of came up and was doing really well, but then same thing. Addictions began to control his life. He had several arrests related to different drugs and things like that. Eventually, in a court-mandated rehab stint, he found sobriety. He had been dismissed from some of his jobs, including the TV show Ally McBeal, and he was basically unhirable at that point. And he found sobriety, began to work through that, and now he is Hollywood's top paid actor. I tried to find out how much he makes. There's the movies where he's made $40 million, $50 million. There's talk about one of the Avengers movies making $200 million. He's the top paid, most sought after Hollywood actor, and somebody that not that long ago was deemed as unemployable because of their addiction issues. Another great comeback. Got to be honest, this is probably my favorite comeback. Oh, man. 2004 Boston Red Sox. Now, don't leave. Because I'm from Maine. I used to watch the Red Sox every night with my grandparents. I lived there in the summer, just fell in love with this team. But that was really tough in New York because people would say that the Red Sox and the Yankees were rivals. Here's the problem. A nail is not a rival to a hammer, okay? We had almost a century of just getting beat down by the Yankees. We weren't rivals. We were doormats, and we got pounded over and over and over, and there's 2003 where it was like, we're finally going to do this, and then the Red Sox found a way to have the most agonizing loss to the Yankees, of course, and it was just this like, well, we're never going to beat them. And then in 2004, maybe it's a different year, and the Red Sox come out in the ALCS, and they lose the first three games, and the third game was 19-8. That was a horrible, horrible day. And it's like, well, you know, here we go again. This is what happens when you're the nail. You don't get to beat the hammer, right? That's how it works. And then something happened. Something changed. The Red Sox became the first team in baseball, the only team in baseball, to win four straight games. Listen, I got three kids, happily married. This was one of the best moments of my life, all right? I will not rate these for you. I will not rank them. I'm just telling you, this one was really, really good. It was a phenomenal comeback. But you should never deliberately alienate your audience. So I know the comeback that we should talk about. I know the comeback that you want to talk about, the one that you want to see, January 3rd, 1993.
Time throws, touchdown for Houston. Little play action fake in the end zone, touchdown. Will goes deep, and it is caught.
What a catch
by Curtis Duncan. Moon goes deep, touchdown Houston. Right goes far side, this is intercepted, and down the far sideline is Bubba McDowell. And Houston moves out in front now, 34-3. Here is Davis, heads for the corner. Buffalo's first touchdown of the ball game comes with 8:52 left to go in the third. Right to throw. Down the side. Oh! Buffalo trailing by four. Right to throw. End zone. Touchdown.
Marv Levy with the, semi-excited reaction. As at this point, that's the greatest comeback in NFL history. Down 35-3. Now the Bills are up 38-35 with a little more than 3 minutes remaining.
26 yards for the top. And it is good from 26 yards away. We are tied 38-38. We are headed for overtime. Moon needs 3 yards. Has the time. Throws. It is intercepted. Buffalo has the ball. Nate Odom. And a attempt of 32 yards for the win. It is right down the middle. And the Buffalo Bills have engineered an unbelievable wild card come from behind, record-setting wild card playoff victory here at Rich Stadium.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great? It will be 25 years ago this January, if you want to feel old. And it's still awesome. I still get goosebumps watching that. It was such an incredible comeback. How many people remember where they were watching that game, right? Anybody, Pastor Vern was there. Anybody else was there? Were there? There were 70,000 people in the stadium that day. 500,000 people in the area claimed that they were at the game. But we believe you, and we believe Pastor Vern as well. I remember I was upstairs. I had to go upstairs to my parents' room because it was blacked out in Rochester, so I had to use the rabbit ears, and if you're under 30, ask someone to explain that to you later, because I could get the Syracuse channel on this 13-inch black and white TV, and I remember watching the entire game. I'd like to tell you I never stopped watching because I didn't give up hope. I just had nothing else to do. I was a kid, and I had the whole day free, so I watched the entire game, and it was just absolutely incredible. I mean, who doesn't love Frank Reich? Who doesn't remember that game? It was an incredible comeback, and one that I think this area, I mean, it's 25 years later, we're still talking about it. But I want to talk about another comeback. I want to talk about the comeback that Jesus made when he was crucified and then risen. He was crucified and risen, and it's important that we put both of those two parts into his destiny, because here's the main point today. Jesus' destiny was to be crucified, but his story didn't end on the cross. His destiny was always to be crucified. It wasn't a last-minute plan. That wasn't a thing that they just concocted. That is why he came to earth. That was his destiny, to be killed on a cross. But thankfully, his story did not end on that cross. So we're going to go to Mark. We're going to wrap this book up, and we're going to start at chapter 15 and kind of go through some of this account, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but we can hear it again, starting in verse 22. They brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. Then they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it, and they crucified him. Dividing up his clothes, they cast lots to see what each would get. It was 9 in the morning when they crucified him. The written notice of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." Then skip forward to verse 33, where it says, "At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. And at 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, 'Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani,' which means, 'My God, why have you forsaken me?' When some of those standing near heard this, they said, 'Listen, he's calling Elijah.' Someone ran, filled a sponge with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. 'Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down,' he said. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last." Jesus was crucified on a cross like a common criminal. His body had withstood incredible punishment, far more than the average person that was crucified at that time. But eventually, he took his last breath. And think of that as he does that. Think of that through the eyes of the disciples. Just think about the disciples for a little bit with me, because they had spent 3 years with him. They had dedicated the last 3 years of their lives to him. And yes, they were initially confused about who he was. They were confused about what exactly he was there for. But they saw him do miracles. They saw him walk on water. They saw him raise Lazarus from the dead. They saw him heal people. And then they saw him die. Then after that, they watched him die. They saw him take his last breath. Now, and as a side note here, I want you to know that when Jesus was crucified, his disciples were shocked. But God was not surprised. I want you to know God was not surprised, because as I told you, this was always Jesus' destiny. God saw it coming. God knew that this was going to happen. Now, God also knew what was going to happen next, which they didn't know. But I want you to know that, because some of you need to know today that God knows where you are too. It's not that it's easy. It's not that he puts you in that spot, but he knew. He's not shocked by that, and he can still work through that. He can work through where you are right now if you will let him do that. So the destiny, the disciples had pictured this destiny in their minds for Jesus, that of a powerful king, a destiny of a conqueror, the destiny of the Messiah, and that was apparently never going to be a reality now. And with that, the destiny that they had pictured in their minds for themselves as a result of Jesus being that powerful king and conqueror, that was also never going to happen. And so we see these disciples, we see that they're timid and they're afraid and they're depressed and they're scattered and they're scared. Here's one thing. If we were going to say something about that group at that time, here's a very reasonable thing to say about that group. You could look at them and say, well, here's one thing I know for sure. They are not the kind of group that's going to carry a substantial movement forward. Certainly, they're not going to carry forward a movement that would change the world to such a degree that over 2,000 years later, people would still gather around to worship this man that they had followed and that they had watched breathe his last breath. It would have been super reasonable to say that, to look at this group at where they were at that time and say, no way. I mean, Peter, their leader, after Jesus was arrested, before Jesus was even killed, I mean, he could not deny Jesus quick enough and to enough people. People are like, hey, aren't you that guy? No, that guy's got a way bigger nose than me, right? No, that's not me. No, I know the guy you're talking about, like less handsome version of me, right? Like, he just quickly, that's not in the Bible, but it's kind of the point. He just, everybody, he's like, Jesus, no, that's not me. He could not deny him quick enough, and this was their leader. This Jesus movement, this thing that they had given up everything to be a part of, had died when Jesus died. That was it. It was over. The scoreboard said 35-3. I mean, it was done. Anyone and everyone knew that it was over. But then something happens. Something happens, and what happens undeniably transforms those same timid disciples. What happens is that there's a turning point. There's a turning point. Look at Mark 16, the last chapter of Mark, verse 1. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. What do you say to someone that's alarmed? "Don't be alarmed." It's great. He said, "You are looking for Jesus, the Nazarene, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him? But go, tell his disciples and Peter he's going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the two women went out and fled the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. I love that. The angel says, Jesus, you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He doesn't say that he wasn't crucified. He said he was crucified, but now he is risen. So that's who you're looking for. The angel kind of says what our main point from today is, that Jesus' destiny was to be crucified, but his story didn't end at the cross. He's saying, yes, you saw that happen, but it didn't end there. And after this turning point, a most incredible thing happens because the apostles were undeniably transformed. This same group of people, suddenly they're aggressive, they're bold, they're full of joy. Suddenly they have joy even in the midst of suffering. You know, Peter, who had gone so far out of his way to deny Jesus, later he preaches boldly throughout the book of Acts. Read the book of Acts and remind yourself, this is the same guy that denied even knowing Jesus to a little girl. In Acts 2, he preaches and 3,000 people repent and believe. 3,000 people. I mean, even Rosalina is impressed with that. Like, that's it. That's a good day for her. But when Peter and the other disciples, when they begin to preach, it wasn't about the miracles. They didn't preach about the miracles. They didn't talk about water being turned into wine or just a little bit of bread and fish being enough to feed a whole group. They didn't talk about walking on water. No, you know what they talked about? It came back to the same thing every time. They had witnessed a resurrection. Look at just a couple verses from Acts. Acts 2:32. God has raised this Jesus to life, and we are all witnesses of it. Acts 3:15. You killed the author of life, but God raised him from the dead. We are witnesses of this. Or Acts 4:2. They're saying the people were greatly disturbed because the apostles were teaching the people, proclaiming what? Proclaiming that in Jesus there is the resurrection of the dead. Over and over, it goes back to we have seen this. We saw the resurrection. Jesus is alive. It's not based on anything else. And if Jesus did not actually rise from the dead, how and why would these disciples have gone from frightened, timid cowards suddenly to bold evangelists willing to die to preach the resurrection if they had just really made the whole thing up and he was still dead? I mean, why would that have happened? John was the only apostle, as far as we know from church history, to actually die of old age. instead of being martyred and killed. And even with him, he didn't have like some smooth, easy path under retirement. Some church traditions say that he was actually thrown into a cauldron of burning oil. He miraculously survived, and so they just exiled him to Patmos. They just threw him on an island, and he went on to write some more of the Bible. Now, you can find a bunch of different stories and traditions as far as how the disciples died, but to the best we can tell, the other disciples all died at the hand of as being martyrs. A few of them were killed by a sword. Some of them were thrown from the pinnacle of the temple and then beaten to death with a blacksmith's tool. One of them was impaled by iron hooks in his ankles and hung upside down to die. One disciple was skinned alive and then beheaded. One disciple was stoned and then beheaded. One was run through with spears. Several were crucified on a cross, including Peter, who insisted on being crucified upside down on a cross because he was not worthy to die in the same way that Jesus had died. Paul, who went on to carry the gospel message forward about the same time as Peter, was beheaded in Rome. And why did they all die? Why were they all killed? Because they refused to deny that they had encountered the risen Lord. No one would say it was a farce. No one would say it was a fraud. No one would say, okay, fine, we just made it up. I mean, who would die for a lie? Would you die for a lie? Would any of us die for a lie? Like, what if we decided, we all got together, and we said, all right, at the 9:30 service this morning, Mark Logan came in on the stage, and he sang karaoke to Rhinestone Cowboy, and he nailed it. He nailed every line of it, he nailed it. What if we all decided, that would be a great story, right? I'm not saying that couldn't happen. I'm just saying it hasn't happened yet. But what if we decided, this is great, let's go. When we leave here, we're going to tell everyone, the people that go Saturday night, the people that go at 11, they're going to be so jealous that they missed this. Let's go out and tell everyone. Now, we're not going to do that because we just did the Ten Commandments series and lying was a part of it. But if we did that and we go out and we start telling people, yeah, man, Rhinestone Cowboy nailed every word. It was awesome. You wouldn't believe it. If suddenly, if we encountered some opposition and people started to say, listen, if you're lying about this, like, you're in trouble. Because if we told everyone that, Mark would probably call the cops. So if the cops were like, hey, if you're lying, you're going to jail, I'd be like, okay, fine, we made it up, right? I'd be the first one. I'm weak. I'm not going to get tortured for anything. I'd be like, no, we made that up. It didn't really happen. You know, now, certainly if it got to the point where people are going to start losing their lives over this lie that we concocted together, we're bailing out of that real quick, right? No, he didn't actually sing that. It's much more believable that he didn't. So none of us would die for a lie, no matter what that lie was. You wouldn't make that up and then say, draw the line in the sand and say, no. But none of the disciples recanted. None of them would renounce what they had seen. None of them would take back what they had said. And that's because they had seen the risen Lord. This same group of people, they were no longer scared of death because they had found life in Jesus Christ. I mean, what else could their motive have been in spreading and sharing the resurrection story? Preaching the resurrection of Jesus, it would not, and it did not bring them anything desirable. It did not bring them wealth. It did not bring them fame. It didn't bring them status. It didn't bring them popularity. It actually brought them all the opposite of those things. J. Warner Wallace, in the book Cold Case, he goes as far to say, if he, Jesus, didn't rise from the dead, they'd have been better off keeping their mouths shut. They had nothing to gain from speaking about him. They had nothing to gain from that. It would only cause them to be hated, to be persecuted, to be excommunicated, to be imprisoned, to be exiled, beaten, beheaded, tortured, crucified. So were they just trying to save face because they felt foolish for following a fraud around for 3 years? Is that what it was? Were they just trying to save face? Now, I know the guys are notorious for going way out of our way to not have to admit that we are wrong, right? We will jump through some hoops to not have to say, shoot, I was wrong. But no one is going to go through what the disciples went through just because they're too embarrassed to say, whew, I guess we were wrong. I guess that guy wasn't really the Messiah. Maybe we should go ask Dad if we can get back into the fishing business. No one is going to do that. So what was their motive? The only reasonable answer is that it was the truth, that they must have actually seen the risen Jesus. Jesus' destiny was always to be crucified. But when he died, the comeback was just beginning because his story did not end on that cross. And as a result of what happened with that, the disciples were undeniably transformed. They became different people. Now, some religions try and dilute people into dying for their cause with the promise of riches and rewards in the next life. But the apostles didn't have that. The apostles didn't have that at all. They didn't die for power. They didn't die for principle. They didn't die to try and protect Jesus. The disciples died preaching that Jesus was alive, and that lives could be changed by believing in him. And how did they know that for sure? Because they had encountered the risen Lord. Life for Jesus had begun again, and that meant that life for them could begin again too. And it absolutely transformed who they were. It transformed them. Sometimes people will ask me, they'll say, John, how do you know for sure that Jesus is alive? How do you know that lives can be changed by believing in him? And I tell them, because I've encountered the risen Lord. Because I've encountered him, and my life has begun again, and it has undeniably transformed who I am. That's how I know. So let me ask you, have you encountered the risen Lord the way that the disciples have? Have you encountered the risen Lord, and has it undeniably transformed who you are? Because here's what we know about comebacks. Every great comeback has a turning point. Every great comeback has a turning point. You can go through all the ones. For Josh Hamilton and Robert Downey Jr., it was sobriety. That was the turning point of their careers that took them from this mess of wasted potential to all that they could be. For the 2004 Red Sox, it was being down by one in the bottom of the ninth to the greatest closer ever and the best postseason pitcher ever, and I'm not sucking up to Yankee fans. Those are both true. And somehow getting a run against a guy we never scored against to turn the tide and come back. For the Bills and Oilers, I would argue it's the Don Beebe touchdown that made it 35-17. That was when it was like, well, I don't know, getting a little frisky. Maybe it could happen. Every comeback has a turning point. So do you know what your turning point is? And have you been transformed as a result of it? If you don't, what will your turning point be? Will it be today? Will it be today? Because some of you know all too well the feeling of being down 35-3. Some of you identify with that as a metaphor in your life so much where you say, man, I don't know, I think it's done, right? I don't think we can come back. We're down by enough now where, like, reasonably we can't say we're going to turn this around and win 41-38. You know that feeling. You feel like in life you are down 35-3 and you just want to hang it up. You just want to mail it in. You just want to, you know that you're not going to turn this around. But every great comeback has a turning point. And so today can be that day that you say, God, make this my turning point. Help me to walk with you. Help me to follow you. Help me to be undeniably transformed by an encounter with you. So here's the takeaway for today. The greatest comeback ever changed the disciples' lives and their destinies. Has it changed yours? Has it changed yours? Because we just spent several weeks on the identity of Jesus, on who Jesus is. He's a servant, he's an inviter, he's a forgiver, he's Lord over all, he's a truth teller, he's a matchless Messiah, and he's a family man. But none of that would have mattered if it wasn't for his destiny. None of that would have mattered if he didn't die on a cross and rise again. And at the same time, none of that matters at all in your life if his destiny doesn't change your destiny. None of it matters. None of this matters. I hope that you love coming here. I hope that you have good friends here. I hope that you enjoy getting a cup of coffee and singing and hearing about God's word. But none of that matters if God's destiny that he had for his son Jesus, if that doesn't change your destiny. Jesus was crucified on a cross. But when that happened, the comeback was just beginning. His story did not end there. And because of that, your story doesn't have to end here. Let's pray.
Thank you for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk and grow in your relationship with Jesus Christ. For other great resources, explore our website at northgatefmc.com and come back next week for another great message. Have a wonderful week.